Welcome back to the Space K Sarah Show, where I do encourage my my co-hosts to sing. So they were
only Lionel Richie songs.
We're still having sort of this introductory sort of phase in our recording relationship, where we're getting to know each other, getting to know each other's style, our flow, our jokes, our puns. We know that Kavi is the master of creating memes on the fly, seriously, because our last episode, he referenced making a donut spaghetti-fied black hole kind of thing, and I saw it on Twitter within hours later.
So
if you're listening to the show and you are like, huh, that was that weird thing that they posted a picture of like a few days ago, that's why. Because we record and then we'll do some real-time reactions to our own silly sense of humor. and then you'll catch up with us.
Just be thankful that I'm actually waiting to do it after the show, because like I'll be in meetings with colleagues and I will make the meme while they're talking and send it to them, which kind of has a tendency to throw them off their game a little bit.
Oh, I've done that at work. It's the great thing to do at work.
Is that your grad school strategy of survival too? They're coming down on you and you're like, ah, look at this meme. Yeah.
No, don't look over here. Don't look at my results. Look at this meme.
Right. I hate the virtual bubble, but that's a way to survive in the working world as well. Nobody wants to be in a meeting. They want to
see it's everyone a on their mechanism. Phone anyway.
Times that this could have been a meeting. We wanted to backtrack to the meteor shower and explain what a meteor shower is and why it happens and why you can predict where they're coming from each year. I actually was outside doing sidewalk astronomy the other night and I saw a couple really big meteorites coming and burning down, and I actually even kind of forgot about the Perseides meteor shower, only because I had just heard from everyone like, oh, between light pollution and the moon being a supermoon, it's really not, you're gonna have to find very dark locations to see it. So I wasn't really thinking about it, but a couple of them really jumped out at me. So let's talk about that. The meteor shower, I do want to drop this because I did look it up, is a result of the Swift-Tuttle comet. Mm-hmm. And I will let you take it from there.
Benjamin, you want to take this one or should I?
No, please do. I'm just laughing inside about the tuttle.
So like you were saying, Sarah, it's the result of a comet. And comets and other celestial objects are things that astronomers are pretty good at tracking, right? We know where things are in space and we know how fast they're moving. And so we can figure out, okay, if they're starting here and they're moving in this way, where will they be in a year? Where will they be in a month? Where will they be in 10 years? And there's actually some really cool software available online that you can even play around with, like where the stars were 2,000 years ago and where they'll be a million years into the future.
Yes, it's actually, so cool. A quick side note to that. At the Field Museum, because I live near Chicago, they redid Sue, the world's famous T-Rex. They redid her exhibit, and she's got these screens that line up behind her. And they actually consulted Adler Planetarium to figure out what the sky would have looked like when Sue was around. So it's accurate to that time era. Mm-hmm. But continue.
Amazing. No, that's so cool. And so with this knowledge, with this incredible power, we can basically predict where the comet's going to be at different times. And what happens with meteor showers is that the Earth's path through space, through the solar system, and the path of the comet intersect, right? So you'd think, oh no, like if the Earth's path and the comet's path are intersecting, that means the comet's going to crash into us and, you know, especially to the dinosaur would not be
kind of situation. We're actually the people on the TV going, you're all going to die.
No, nothing like that, thankfully. But basically, the comet, as it travels through space on this orbital path, is leaving a trail of dust and gas and tiny rocks. And that's what the Earth is passing through, right? We're not actually hitting the comet. We're just passing through the trail left behind by the comet. And so as the Earth's path intersects the path and this trail left by the comet, all these tiny rocks and bits of dust, grains, and all these small things hit our atmosphere and burn up in the atmosphere. And so that's actually what we're seeing when we see a meteor shower. We're seeing all these little tiny flecks of dust and rock hitting the atmosphere and burning up. And so that's why we'll know exactly where they are. And that's why they happen on a regular interval. So whether this is an annual thing or whether this is, you know, something that happens at a kind of a longer period between each time that we see it.
Sure. And you're, Benjamin, kind of our history buff, science nerd, fact kind of. But so, no, I'm just thinking about this because, you know, early humans would look up and they'd see things and they'd be like, WTF, you know, and unanimously of every civilization viewed a comet as a bad omen.
Right.
But what did they view, like, meteorite showers? Were those bad inherently too? I mean, they're the same thing. They're technically part of a comet. They wouldn't have known that. So
our more primitive, I guess you could say, ancestors.
Yeah.
Whenever they looked at the night sky, they were pretty, you know, comforted in how stable they appeared to be.
Sure.
Right. There are only a few of the stars that moved, and those few didn't twinkle because they're planets and they're much closer. And so they understood, you know, that's just the way the heavens work. Some of them thought those were gods. Some of them thought those were campfires. Some of them thought whatever, but all around the world, they all pretty much thought, that, you know, as long as they don't change, we're cool.
Right.
And so usually bad omens was a sign to anything that came out of the ordinary. I would assume a comet would be much more catastrophic in their interpretations than a simple meteor shower, but still, you know, anything different was interpreted as often negative connotation.
Sure. And I guess, you know, meteor showers are predictable and they show up at the same time each year. So this would probably be the type of meteor shower that they'd be like, oh, this means summer's coming to a close. We probably should, you know, start fall.
I was going to ask Kavi, are there like a few major comets that are the, you know, the main culprits behind our regular meteor showers, or we just know that there's going to be a meteor shower around this time because we're going to be going in the path of a few different comets or something like that?
That's a really good question, Benjamin. I don't know for sure, but that would make sense. I mean, we have these regular big meteor showers every year, right? Like the Perseids, Leonids, the you know, I think it's almost like once per quarter, and the rest.
The other ones that we have to Google how to say their names. Ones, yeah, I got it.
Exactly. And I would assume that each of them would have a well-known, relatively you know, well-constrained in terms of how often it passes, comet associated with it. I don't know exactly which comets. Like this one, we said it's the comet Swift-Tuttle. But yeah, I would assume so. That's my answer, and I'm sticking to it.
Final answer.
So if he's wrong, you come after Kavi, not us. We're gonna plead the fifth over here.
We go down as a team.
And then he goes, "Look at my spaghetti donut meme."
It's a meme. Just look at the meme. What I will say. one thing I will say, definitely not to change the subject to point away from my own ignorance, is that you know, we're talking about how our ancestors view these, you know, strange events, these changes that were happening in the sky. There are a lot of civilizations that actually had like really surprisingly good understandings.
Absolutely.
And would be able to track not just the passage of time and the seasons, but also like you know, like hunting patterns for different animals. I mean, the Aboriginal and First Nations people here in Australia, they all saw, I mean, you had different groups across the country. They weren't all, you know, one group, but I think all or most of them had different myths associated with the center of the galaxy and the great emu constellation. And that basically, when they would see at different times of the year, the emu or the center of the galaxy be in a different place, that would mean, okay, is now the time of the year that we hunt emu eggs, or is now the time of the year that we let the emus breed? And like, that's just, you know, the first example off the top of my head.
Sure.
But all of these things, you know, all these things that now we're slowly understanding what these constellations are doing on a physical level, all had associations tens of thousands of years ago.
It makes me think of, you know, like the pyramids of Giza, and also there's a temple in Egypt that there's a certain point in every year that the sun shines in on three of the four statues, except one of the statues always stays in the shadows because that's the one that represents death. So there's like a, at any given point, it can shine in at some points, but at one, like two times a year, I should say, it can shine in and it hits all of the gods that are in that temple, except for that one. And that was done intentionally. And I mean, I can't even figure out like east and west sometimes when I'm just driving around. Anyone who knows me in real life will can completely attest to this, that I am so directionally challenged. So the fact that, you know, early people could do this to me. I don't remember who I had this conversation with. I feel like it was with you, Kavi, at one point where I was like, if you know, the Enlightenment age, I would not have been able to contribute to that. No, I don't think so. We'd all be still probably riding horses if it were people like me. But, but you know, if you're in the area in the Northern Hemisphere, because, well, is it on both hemispheres? I guess it would be, right?
I think this one, I think this one also is in the Southern Hemisphere. Yeah. Well,
there you go. So if you're on planet Earth, watch the meteor shower.
Sorry, people living in the moon.
Well, we don't know if they're really there yet. And you're into astronomy too, right, Benjamin? You have some telescopes, and you're.
I have a big Dobsonian telescope
there. He's got a Canon. What did your wife call the Canon? Your Canon again?
I came home from a poker game. I won it in a poker game. I showed up and I pulled the whole thing out of the car. And my wife's like, what the hell did you just do? I'm like, I got this. A water heater? Because it's massive, like a water heater. It's almost as tall as me. I'm 6'5". And it's a big white cylinder. I'm like, no. It's a telescope. It's a Dobsonian telescope. She's like, what are you going to do with it? I'm like, look at the moon.
I'm still stuck on the fact that you won it in a poker game, and you know what? I think I'm going to win a poker game telescope as well sometime in the near future.
From now on, he has set the bar of going to betting games, poker games. You'll show up at the table and be like, is there a telescope available?
No, I went to my buddy's house, and we were there. His dad was there, which was great. And,
so there are witnesses. You didn't just buy a telescope and claim that you won it in poker.
We were friends, and he was having he was in a pretty low point. He's fine now. He's a great guy. And his dad was there for support, and the buddies and me and myself included all showed up, and were, you know, just there for him, and it was great. And pats on the back, some food, a couple of drinks. Let's play poker. We played for money, not a lot. And then towards the end, he just, the hell with it. Benjamin, you like science, right? I'm putting that on the table. Well, metaphorically speaking. Yeah.
It'd be a big thing to put on the table.
I'm like, you don't have to. I'm like, well, he's like, yeah, if you win, you win. And I didn't think I would win, actually. And I did. And I'm like, all right, let's get that in the car.
And I'm guessing if you're 6'5", I'm 5'10". And if it's about as tall as you, that must be a 12-inch Dob, which is what I have a 12-inch. And those are monstrous telescopes. I have a sneaky suspicion that it was too cumbersome for him to use quite regularly. And he probably was like, I can let it go. That's kind of how I acquired mine too. Pretty it was much. A woman who was like, she was like, I can sell it to you really cheap. It lives in a closet. Cause it is, they're big and they're big. They're not easy to schluff around. So well, yours is the water boiler. What, the water heater?
Water boiler. Yeah.
Yeah. Mine are
called. It doesn't have any electronic parts at all. You have to physically move it wherever you want. So it's excellent for looking at the moon, the big target. If I'm able to bullseye Saturn or Jupiter even, you get a decent view of it, but it moves out of frame too quick.
Yeah.
But it's nice. I've seen the Galilean moons and
Lost
my mind running around the neighborhood screaming, oh my God.
You should buy an easy finder and just attach it onto it.
Well, it has an easy finder on it.
Oh, it does? Oh.
I don't know how accurately lined up it is with the telescope as a whole. So it's excellent for craters on the moon. Excellent.
Sure. Well, mine get out of line too. And so what I do is during the daytime, I go out into my neighborhood and I find people's chimneys or some point on the top of their house to to do my, to line them up together. Brilliant. So then when my neighbors come out later to look through my telescope, I'm like, I promise I'm not trying to like look in your house or be creepy or like, you know, be peeping Tom, if you will. I'm just trying to align my telescopes. We're going to take a break and we will, I guess, continue talking about perhaps meteor showers or telescopes or something like that. And I hope that, you know, this is entertaining for everyone involved. I will go get more helium if I need to. You're listening to the Space K Sarah Show with space nerds Kavi and Benjamin here on iRock Space Radio.